Be bold, be brave, be extraordinary, be vulnerable, be real, be curious, be true, be you. Welcome to Trusting Your Gut with world-class energy intuitive Catherine McIntosh, a show designed to awaken you to enjoy the process of evolving. Have fun along the way and learn to listen to those silent in-between moments. You are the expert of your own life, and nobody knows more about the next steps to take in your journey than you. So please, listen to your gut and discover what's waiting for you to explore. Here is your host, Catherine McIntosh.
All right, my magical friends, so welcome to the show today. I am excited for today's topic, and it's a little different. It's a little offbeat, but I think it's a topic that probably will contribute to most of you. So today's topic is all about body dysmorphia. And I think that body dysmorphia is something that isn't really talked about a lot. It's also known as body dysmorphic disorder. And although I have studied psychology and do have a background, I can't give you the exact definitions, although I have pulled some stuff up for some notes. But I recently saw that Megan Fox had posted something, there was something posted about her explaining that she suffers from body dysmorphia. And body dysmorphia is this idea that your body isn't good enough, that you have these massive flaws and you obsess over these flaws. So I wanted to kind of share, and then I'll go into a story and share some stories with you. But here are some signs that you might suffer from this amazing condition. And then we're going to kind of talk about solutions and why it's so important. And so body dysmorphia can show up as symptoms like being really preoccupied. And I am going to read this, right? I got this from therapist.com. So it's about being preoccupied with your physical flaws, real or imagined. It's about believing others are staring at you or making fun of you. This was a big one for me in my childhood. I always thought people were staring at me and I didn't know why. And I always thought like, what's wrong with me? They're staring at me. Do I have like snot out of my nose or like crap in my teeth or what, you know, is my butt too big? I had all these thoughts. And so some other symptoms are constantly looking at yourself in the mirror or completely avoiding mirrors altogether. It can also be a mix of both. Thinking obsessively about your body and physical appearance. Constantly comparing yourself to others. Avoiding social events or activities. I've missed out on weddings and parties and family gatherings and dates, all because I thought that I was too big, right? Another thing can be using clothing or makeup to hide perceived flaws. So all of you that like wearing black, thinking that black hides your flaws, that can be one. Seeking frequent reassurance. Grooming yourself constantly, picking at your skin, spending a lot of money on cosmetic treatments or products. This can also include diets, right? Diet pills, the next big fad, exercising too much, dieting constantly, feeling anxiety, depression, or shame. And there's so many other things that can happen, but here's sort of what the downside of this. It's great to have the information, but the downside is when you're preoccupied with something and feel like you constantly need to fix it, well, guess what? You spend all your time and energy on trying to fix that thing. And when you spend all your time and energy trying to fix that thing, you miss out on living. You miss out on being present in the moment. You miss out on these magical little things all day long. You also can miss out on great ideas for what to do or where to go next in your life. And so I really believe that this, you know, social media doesn't help. Filters don't help. And also having these pictures of celebrities that may seem quite unrealistic, it adds to it. And so it can show up like you have an eating disorder or that you're constantly on a diet all of the time. And, you know, I got to be honest, I personally have probably suffered from body dysmorphia for longer than I was aware of after I read about these symptoms, in particular the one where you constantly think that you're being made fun of. I remember being at a bar mitzvah when I was 13 years old. My neighbor was going through the ceremony, and afterwards we went to a party, right? There was a huge party afterwards and there was an awesome DJ. I even remember what I was wearing. I was wearing a white, like fluffy skirt and this like turquoise top. And I remember at one point having so much fun on the dance floor, kind of losing myself in the moment and the music. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm doing this like, you know, crazy dance, and I see the DJ laughing, and I immediately assume that he's laughing at me. He was actually laughing with me because I was having so much fun, but I immediately stopped dancing. I immediately got like insecure, sort of went into my little cocoon. And I remember just kind of having this pit in my stomach. And so, you know, when I was looking up what are the treatments of body dysmorphia, it talks about therapy. It talks about, you know, getting on antidepressants. And it also says like antidepressants are not the cure. They just might help you like deal with the situation. And I think that's true for anything that we suffer from. So I really was looking at this last week. I wrote a book called Don't Diet, Be Happy, because I know what it's like to spend half of my life missing out on living because I was so concerned about my body image. And it really got me not living my life, not happy. And I even went so far as to become anorexic and get down to 96 pounds, which for my frame is quite small, like dangerously small. And when I got down to that weight, I remember waking up in a hospital. I had IVs and machines hooked up to me. And I remember thinking it didn't work. No amount of dieting or exercise worked to make me feel better. I still had this feeling, which now we know is called body dysmorphia. And what I've discovered over the years is you can't get rid of it. Just like an addict can't get rid of that sort of addiction, but how they change and how they transform is by changing their relationship to the addiction. And so it is my belief that people who suffer from this condition, they have had a very traumatic childhood in some way. They didn't feel seen. They didn't feel supported. They felt abandoned. They felt like they weren't enough. And they translated that those feelings into trying to change their body. When you are obsessed with trying to change your body, you miss out on living. When you are obsessed with trying to hide your body, you miss out on living. You will never see an elephant hide behind a tree complaining because it ate too much grass, right? An elephant lives off of grass and they are one of the biggest animals in the world. And so it's about beginning to change your relationship with what you think is wrong and change your relationship with you. And so particularly, I think people who end up having body dysmorphia, this is just my opinion. Remember, I'm not a licensed psychologist. It's just sort of a conversation. But here's, you know, this show is all about trusting your gut. And I'm fascinated by anything that takes us out of being able to listen to our intuition and trust our intuition when it comes through. And so I really believe that this can be sort of a lifelong experience. It doesn't mean you have to suffer for the rest of your life. It means that you have to change your relationship with what makes you suffer. So addicts suffer from insecurity, from, you know, they want to escape the life that they're currently in. And the best feeling that they get is when they are tapping into their addiction. And yet over time, that addiction takes over their entire life. And I believe body dysmorphia, in my personal opinion, is an addiction. It's an addiction to hating ourselves. It's an addiction to constantly comparing and contrasting. And when you're in that addiction, you can't be aware of what's true for you. You can't be aware of the magic and miracles that are around you all the time. And I really believe that this takes us away from the joy of living. We were not meant to suffer. Animals, when they start suffering, they don't spend years suffering. They go, wow, I'm suffering. And usually it's because their body breaks down. And horses in particular, when a horse knows it's at the end of their life and their body starts to suffer, they will walk off into a field, walk off into the trees, and they will lay their bodies down and go. And humans are the one animal that apparently love this idea of suffering. And I personally don't think we need to suffer as much as we do. And I believe that we are addicted to suffering. We are addicted to judging ourselves. We are addicted to comparing and contrasting. And then that leads to using substances. It leads to living in chronic lies. It leads to affairs. It leads to sneaking things. It leads to living a life in secret. And it leads to having an unrealistic body image of yourself. Now, not everyone suffers from body dysmorphia, but you would be surprised if everyone got diagnosed that it would be quite astounding the numbers of people that suffer from an unrealistic body image of themselves. And most people who suffer from body dysmorphia, speaking from personal experience, think they are bigger than they are. And those that suffer from anorexia, they actually, when they look in the mirror, they don't see skin and bones, right? I got down to skin and bones. I was hospitalized for getting down to skin and bones. And it cost me a lot. And so when people are in this, they're constantly looking for something to make them feel better, looking to take away their pain. And unfortunately, that never works long term. It might work short term, like an addict getting high, but it doesn't work long term. And I know plenty of alcoholics, I call them dry drunks. And what I mean by that is they still are in the addiction of alcoholism. They never really healed from it. They just don't drink. But I know a lot of alcoholics that are like, well, I smoke pot, or well, I, you know, smoke cigarettes, or well, I'm addicted to candy. And they replace that addiction with some other addiction. So they're not actively drinking, but they're still in their addiction. And people who suffer from body dysmorphia, they're in their addiction. And, you know, food is something that's tricky for people who suffer from some form of insecurity with their body, because you can live without alcohol. You could live another day and never have to drink a drop. But food, some people might argue with me, but food usually is a necessary component of living. However, we have abused food. We've overused food. We've put almost too much attention on food. And I do think that food is important. I think it's important to trust your body and to know what your body sort of revs up on and what it prefers in terms of its sources for energy. But it's an experiment and it's a process. And, you know, those that suffer from body dysmorphia, they don't believe compliments. They don't ever believe they're good enough. And the trick isn't to focus on the body dysmorphia. The trick is to find, and this is, I believe this is true for almost any malady that we experience that is mental, but then later manifests as physical or emotional, is that it's this, I lost my train of thought, but it's this idea that you can get rid of the body dysmorphia. And I actually believe that that's a lie, but also this idea that you can fix the body dysmorphia. I personally, from personal experience, don't believe you can fix it or get rid of it. I think you have to change your relationship to it. And so when you, and this is what I believe is at the root of most of our maladies, is there's a moment in time. And usually it happens when we're really little, like usually from 0 to 3. We might remember from 3 to 6 or 6 to 7 or 7 to 8 or 8 to 9 to 13, somewhere in that area. But it's a moment in time where we abandoned ourselves. So you may have experienced a sexual abuse, a physical abuse, an emotional abuse. You may have grown up in a family where you were ignored, and maybe it wasn't even intentional. And over time, you abandoned you. And I believe it's the moments in our lives when we abandon ourselves. So we might have been abandoned. There are plenty of people who have that story of being abandoned, and it's real. Right? It is real. And when you feel that, it is easier to push people away first so that they don't push you away, so that they don't abandon you. And most of us try very hard. Now, I don't believe this is, we don't do it consciously, but we try really hard to avoid getting rejected. So we will do to others first what we don't want to have done to us. And unfortunately, almost all of us, I have yet to meet a human being who has not at some point in their timeline of their life abandoned themselves. And if you believe in past lifetimes, there's probably plenty of past lifetimes in which you abandoned you. And so that sets us up for when we abandon ourselves, we tend to blame the situation or the experience. It's like, oh, that person did that to me. That's why I'm this way. And if that is your mode of operating or your philosophy on your experiences of life, we all have had trauma. We all have had horrible things that have happened to us. And I'm going to say something that might ruffle some feathers, but we already abandoned ourselves, or we abandon ourselves in that moment. And I believe the key to healing anything that we are stuck on or stuck with is to go back in time to this place where we abandoned ourselves. And as our, you know, all-knowing self and our alive sense of being, take that energy of going there. You know, it's kind of like, wow, if you were the adult in your relationship at the time when you were a baby, how would have you showed up for your adult? I know I have a 10-year-old and I'm a very different parent based on how I was parented. It's not my parents' fault. I'm not going to blame them. Blaming them does not allow for healing. Blaming only allows me to repeat the pattern and this philosophy or concept that I'm not enough. And if I'm not enough, then I have to change something about myself to try to prove I'm enough. But like Einstein said, you can't solve a problem in the same way you created it. And so fixing it never really allows for a permanent solution. And when people can sort of adjust the concept of having a different relationship with the thing that you struggle with, so whether it's addiction, whether it's, you know, addicted to substances, addicted to suffering, whether it's body dysmorphia, which is also an addiction, right? It's this compulsion to hate yourself, this compulsion. And I don't even think it's cognitive, but you end up having a very dysfunctional relationship with how you appear to the rest of the world. And you're terrified of being made fun of, or you think that everyone's making fun of you all the time. Or maybe you think your people are judging you all the time. Oh my God, what do they think about me? They're going to judge me. Oh, what if my butt looks too big? Like, whatever that is a sort of a sign that you might suffer from this thing that has been labeled as body dysmorphia. And, you know, you can't heal a symptom with a symptom. You can only go to the root of it. And I believe the root of almost all of our suffering is from the moment that we abandoned ourselves. And it doesn't matter when you did it, but we all do it. And we do it young, we do it in our teenagers, we do it in adulthood. We say yes to things we don't want to say yes to. We say no to things we want to say yes to. We suffer from insecurity. We suffer from I'm not good enough. And I think that that's a big fat lie. The truth is you are good enough. The truth is you've always been good enough. The truth is there is nothing wrong with you except for the way that you view yourself. What's wrong with you is you think something is wrong with you. And when you think something is wrong with you, you can't be the gift that you came here to be. And I was listening to Ed Milet on a podcast, and he was talking about how, you know, the man that helped his dad get sober was an alcoholic. And if that man would have said, well, I'm an alcoholic, I'm no good to anyone, I will never help anyone, I can't do anything, Ed would have had a very different future moving forward in his life. But some man came along and helped his dad to sobriety, helped his dad heal, helped his dad become a better dad. And Ed and his dad had, you know, a better relationship once that happened. And Ed said he had this sort of epiphany, woke up in the middle of the night one night and said, oh my gosh, somebody helped my dad. Somebody who was an alcoholic was qualified to make a difference, not just in my life, right? In my dad's life, but he made a difference in my life. And because he made a difference in my life, I was able to make a difference in so many other people's lives. And so sometimes when we are suffering, we're very, I'm going to say the word monochromatic, and we're more internal. And so what happens is, this is just my personal opinion, I believe we go into sort of this concept of small thinking. And we forget that our energy can impact the world everywhere we go. And so when you are stuck in small thinking, right, which means you're only focused on your problems, you're focused on your suffering, that is the least effective way to create not suffering, to create aliveness, to create connection, to create engagement. And so one of the reasons that I love doing what I do in the world, which is to help people transform, and whether that's in their life, in their relationships, in their business, in their health, in their body, you know, I am just happen to be an expert at getting to the root of the causes that we probably can't see ourselves. And so if you've been working on a problem that you've had for at least a year and you haven't made any significant impact in changing that problem, chances are the method or ways that you've attempted to go about it are in the same way in which you created the problem. So you can't actually change it. You have to go somewhere totally different. So when I work on physical bodies and somebody's really suffering, let's say in their lower back, one of the last places I go is the lower back. I first go to everywhere else that's healthy and alive and working well and try to sort of amp up the rest of the body first. And so when you are self-absorbed in your suffering, it's not intentional. You don't mean to. You're just desperate to get out of suffering. But you might want to ask yourself the question is, am I enjoying this suffering? What do I love about suffering? Because there's something about it that I keep repeating this pattern. And so if you jump from thing to thing, that isn't the solution. The solution is to dive into your brilliance, to take your monochromatic thinking, to take your micro thinking, to take your self-suffering, thinking that if you could just get out of your depression, get out of your anxiety, get out of your woes with your physical body, then you'll be happy. But it rarely works that way. And so the first step in this is to actually get really big, to broadband your attention, to go into a macro thinking instead of a micro thinking, to go into a universal thinking, because we all suffer. And, you know, some of you like to punish yourselves more than others. I know in my past, I was definitely a sucker for suffering. But the way that you get out of it isn't by trying to solve your suffering. The way that you get out of it is by trying to increase your gratitude and your joy. And the only way that I was able to stop my body was through that avenue. So I'm going to change my relationship with my body. So after we take a break, I'm going to share some solutions and some things you can do to incorporate not just changing your relationship with your body or your addiction or suffering, but to actually create a life worth living for you. So stay tuned and we'll be back after these messages.
OM Times TV.
Do you trust you? Do you trust your body? What if the key to unlocking the weight, pain, suffering, fear, anxiety, addictions, traumas, and sorrows was already inside of you? Learn to love the skin you are in so you can create the body, business, and life you love. Everyone always says you can't explain what Catherine does, you just have to experience it. From Hollywood actors to New York Times best-selling authors to some of the world's wealthiest and most successful, no two experiences are the same. For private sessions, online courses, live events, and the latest book Jack Canfield calls Game Changer and should be required reading for everyone, go to KatherineMcIntosh.com. KatherineMcIntosh.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. OWN Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, OWN Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an OWN Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OWN Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OWN Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OWN Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
All right, so welcome back from the break. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about body dysmorphia. And, you know, it's a topic that I relate to quite almost don't want to admit it. But, you know, the more I recognize that it is valuable to talk about our life experiences, because chances are there are people out there that resonate with the message that when you get personal with what you've experienced and how to change it, if you've been able to change it, it makes a bigger impact. And so I do suffer from body dysmorphia, and I've really never been able to get rid of it. Just like an addict can't really ever get rid of its addiction, but it can change its relationship. And so I wanted to offer some solutions, and then I'll go into some stories, because stories always help you remember the solutions. But one of the solutions, right, is to begin to adopt a way of gratitude. And I talk about this in Don't Diet, Be Happy, the book that I wrote that Jack Canfield literally said should be required reading for everyone and is a game changer, pattern interrupt, and major disruptor. And, you know, in the book, I offer solutions, because for 20 years, I was the girl who was constantly on a diet, was constantly in a gym membership, was constantly like over-exercising, under-eating. And it didn't matter how little I ate or how much I exercised, I still couldn't change my body because I was functioning from judging my body. So the first step is to stop the judgments. We're not taught that we can stop judgments. We're not taught to go, just because it's in my head, which is why I like meditating, because you get to witness how insane your thoughts are. And just because those thoughts are crossing through your sort of membrane in your cranium doesn't mean those thoughts are yours. A lot of times when you hear things of like, you're fat and ugly, that thought is coming from somewhere outside of you, because it says you're fat and ugly. Your body will never talk to you as in like you, right? Your body would never label you as fat and ugly. You would never hear an elephant complain about the size of its rear end, right? And so the first step is to go, I am, you know, I sort of came up with this concept a decade ago called the no judgment diet. And what it was for me, because I was obsessed with using the mirror to fuel my addiction to not being good enough, to finding fault with my physical body, even when most people would be like, I don't see the faults. I don't see the problems you're talking about. I'd be like, no, look, really. And so the first step is to come up with this idea of no matter what it is you use to judge you, do you use food to judge you? Do you use the mirror to judge you? Do you use your reflection in storefronts to judge you? Do you use how other people interact with you to judge you? Whatever you use to judge you, you want to start to commit to going on what I call no judgment diet. And how you do that is you go, no matter what, I'm not allowed to entertain those judgments. So you can't stop the judgments, but you can change your reactions to them. And most people, when a judgment comes into their universe, into their thought process, into their energy field, they go entertaining those judgments and they take those judgments to the therapist, or they take those judgments to their coach, or they take those judgments to their, you know, wine date nights with their ladies. And then they fuel it. It's kind of like when you're in an office and there's one bad egg and they start talking crap about everybody. It definitely like makes an impact on that work environment's cultural experience. And it dumbs down the experience. It makes it not so pleasant to be at work. And so it makes it not so pleasant to be with yourself when you allow yourself to go down the rabbit hole of reacting to your judgments. Oh my God, I'm so fat and ugly. Oh my God, I'll never get it right. Oh my God, I'm always going to get abandoned. And whatever it is that you energize, that's what shows up in your life because it's in your vibration. It's what you're thinking. It's how you're feeling. And so then you keep attracting what you've decided is real for you, which from experience, I know we can shift that. And so for all of you suffering from some sort of lack, the first key in changing it is to make a commitment to stop being so reactive to non sort of contributory energies. So if you have an energy of you're not good enough, you better go on another diet, you better change your body, you better fix your face, you better do whatever it is, that is not contributing to you creating the best life you can create. And so the first thing is to commit, especially if it comes to your body, commit to what I call a no judgment diet. And you can apply this to anything and everything. So when those thoughts come in, like your addiction, like you're not good enough, like you must lose weight, you're going to stop it. So for me personally, whenever I would look in the mirror, I would see a person that was at least 20 to 50 pounds bigger than I actually am. And I still suffer from this. Okay, so I never got rid of the body dysmorphia. I just was able to change my relationship to it. Really huge difference. And there is a world out there that where are teenagers, there are 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds suffering. There are 70-year-olds suffering from not feeling good enough. And then they hide in their house. They isolate. They go on diet after diet. They spend money searching for solutions, never quite really resolving where the original conflict started. And I believe, as I said before break, that I believe the conflict starts in all the moments when we abandon ourselves, when we give up, when we play the victim. And so in order to solve this sort of body dysmorphia and create a different relationship with it, the first step is go on a no judgment diet. So no matter what it takes, you commit to not judging yourself. So whenever I would pass a mirror, which was my sort of method of judging myself of choice, I committed that I wasn't going to let myself look in the mirror and entertain judgments. Instead, I would stop the judgment. And then I would think of 1, 2, 3 things that I could genuinely be grateful for. And when I came up with this concept, I was a brand new mom. My son was 2 months old and I'm really cute. I decided that day I was feeling good about myself. So I was going to put on my skinny jeans. Now, you might be the type of mom that 2 months after delivering a baby, you can put on your skinny jeans, but that was not my truth. And so my skinny jeans in the hallway of my home with a full-length mirror at the end of the hallway in between the bedrooms, I am trying on these skinny jeans and they get stuck halfway up my thigh and I can't get them on anymore. And I start having a complete mental breakdown. I went into, who do you think you are? You're not good enough. You'll never be good enough. And on, everything you could think of, I shouted every obscenity to myself in the mirror that I could think of. And I don't know, 5, maybe 10 minutes passed. And I kind of had this come to moment and I saw this little thing on at the side of, there goes one of my lights, at the side out of my peripheral vision. And it was my 2-month-old son. He was 2 months to the day, sitting on this tan shag carpet with the sunlight coming through the window and smiling at me with the brightest, biggest smile. And I am in mid tears. I am mid frustration. I am mid hating myself. And I went, it shook me. It shook me awake. It shook me alert. And I went, oh my God, if I just spent 5+ minutes missing out on receiving that level of energy from my son. And to be honest, I forgot I had even had a son in that moment. I forgot I was home alone with him. Like, talk about insanity. He was safe. He was fine. But it was like, it shook me awake. And that was the moment I was like, that's it. I am going on a year-long no judgment diet. And so every time that I use the mirror to want to judge, ridicule, criticize, inspect, I said, I'm going to use the mirror to think of at least 1 to 3 things I could be grateful for. And when I first started doing this, the only thing that I could be grateful for was my smile, was my eyes, was my freckles, right? And my hair. And the rest of it, I was like, I can't be grateful from the neck down. Like, there is nothing to be grateful for, because in that moment, I was so in my addiction to suffering when it came to my body that I thought, there's no way I'll ever be happy with my body. There is no way I will ever get free of this hellhole. But day after day, I would get in the mirror and I would force myself to look in my body and find something I could be grateful for. And I had this moment, this epiphany one day, as I'm looking in the mirror, staring at my legs, and all I can think of is things that were not nice to say to my own body about my legs. And I went, oh, I can be grateful for the fact that those legs scored the game-winning goal in the semifinals to get us to win the final game to win the state championship. I scored the final goal with 1:37 left, and it was like to the wire. Me and this girl, like, going after the ball, both falling down at the same time. I got up in a split second. She was still down on the ground and I was able to score a goal. And I remember the feeling of the crowd just going wild. And so that moment was like a light bulb moment when it happened. And I went, wow, I can be grateful for that. And not only can I be grateful for it, by thinking of that moment, it changed the energy in my body. And I went from not being able to be grateful for my legs at all to racking my brain for all of life's moments in time where I could be grateful for my body. And I thought about hiking Machu Picchu with a 60-pound backpack. And I was one of the last people on that trail without a guide. and it was legal at the time, right? This is 1999. I'm dating myself, but it was legal at the time. And I was the last, I was with myself and the person who would become my first husband. And we hiked Machu Picchu on our own without a guide. Now, after there was a strike happening, there were very little people on the trail. And after that strike, they went on to basically make it illegal for anyone to hike that trail on their own. And so I remember going, wow, those legs carried a 60-pound backpack. Those legs like backpacked for 10 days through Bryce Canyon National Park in Utah and saw Zion. And those legs mountain biked up mountains all over the world. And so I started to adopt this energy and this feeling of gratitude that literally began to change my life. And the more grateful I became, which means I wasn't trying to get rid of the dysmorphia, I was trying something different, which was gratitude, which was no judgment. And that's the thing that changed my life. And I went on to build a multiple six-figure business. I went on to become a single mom. I went on to raise my son in Aspen, Colorado. And so there are moments like today I woke up and I had a body dysmorphia moment. And I went, let's think of something that you can be grateful for. Let's think of all of the things that you've created. And so when I tell and talk about being grateful, I'm not talking about fake it till you make it, like, oh, I guess I like my chest or my neck or my hands or my, you know, now I have pretty nails. I love my hands, right? I love adorning myself with jewelry. It's another form of gratitude. I'm like putting stuff on my body that I, when I look at it, makes me happy. And so through the process of gratitude, not, oh, I guess I can like it, but find something that you can genuinely be grateful for. When we're in a funk, when we're depressed, when we feel anxiety ridden, when we're about to go into our addiction, and I'll say an aside, and maybe I'll do a separate show if you want me to do a separate show on addiction. I have a lot to say about it. And it might be a completely different perspective than you've ever heard before. But, you know, this idea that addiction, I believe that a lot of addiction comes from, so that moment that we abandon ourselves leaves room for something or someone else to come into our bodies. And when that something or someone else comes into our bodies, it energizes an addiction. So, you know, where do addicts who have passed hang out? They hang out in bars. They hang out in spaces where the addiction is rampant, maybe nightclubs. And so you go into a nightclub and you're not feeling so great about yourself. So you have a little too much alcohol. You abandon yourself in the moment by over drinking. And all of a sudden you come home feeling really not yourself. Maybe you feel depressed. Maybe you feel like drinking in the morning and that's not your normal. You know, a lot of times people who suffer from some form of a mental disorder, now I might get a lot of flack for saying this, but it's, excuse me, usually because something or someone else is in their body. My body dysmorphia exponentialized the day my grandmother died. And looking back at it, I realized that the day she died, I actually knew to the minute that she died. Now, I wasn't with her. I was in school as a sophomore in high school on my 15th birthday at 10:30 in the morning when the bell rang, I almost passed out. And lo and behold, my grandmother had died. Now, I didn't find out till midnight that night. I was pissed. My parents weren't around, so I ended up celebrating my 15th birthday sulking, suffering, and depressed. But you know, my body suffering and my body dysmorphia got a lot more pronounced the day my grandma died. And the day my grandma died, I started suffering from physical body aches that I had never had before. My grandmother died of shingles. And so sometimes when we have addicts in our family or in our DNA or in our lineage and they pass, they choose the most comfortable body that they can be around. And then that person ends up suffering. And I believe this happens to a lot of addicts. And so, you know, taking a medication may help, but it won't solve the problem. Gratitude begins to raise your vibration. And the more you raise your vibration, the less something can live in your body. Now, I might not ever be able to get rid of the body dysmorphia, but I certainly can change the role that it plays and the effect that it has on my life. So the days like today, when I wake up in not the greatest place with my body and not the greatest relationship, I know that it's best if I get outside and move my body. I know it's best if I start being grateful for all the things about my body. I know it's best that I don't wear tight clothes. I know that it's best that I make sure that I eat things that I feel good eating instead of things that I think I'm going to judge about myself. But usually when we don't feel good about ourselves, the first thing we do is we go into whatever level of addiction we have. Right? When someone doesn't feel good about themselves and they're an alcoholic, the first thing they want is a drink. Even when they're not drinking, right? And so I believe this addiction and this suffering comes from the moments that we abandon ourselves and then we make ourselves susceptible to other energies taking up space. But when we raise our vibration with gratitude, the more consistently we raise our vibration consciously, well, guess what? Disease cannot live in a high vibration body. Lack cannot live in a high vibration being, right? Suffering cannot live long term in a high vibration being. And so part of this is to do the exact opposite of what you think you need to do. We think we need to deal with the suffering. No, we actually need to raise our vibration, right? And I know this from personal experience. So up until about a year and a half ago, so my body for 10 years, almost a decade, once I adopted the no judgment diet, I rarely really went into suffering. I did go into judgment, but I tried not to react to those judgments. I tried to be well equipped and resourced to be able to deal with the judgments when they arose, and I adopted an attitude of gratitude. And so, you know, once I did that, it was easier to raise my vibration. Now, a year and a half ago, I went and started to go through perimenopause. And if anyone knows, everyone's like, oh, you gain weight. Oh, you get lethargic. Your hormones get off. You go crazy. Well, I started listening to all that. Guess what happened? I started experiencing all that. I hadn't yet. I was so well equipped to deal with where I was and know how to resource myself to get beyond it. But when I brought in a new element, a surprise element called perimenopause or menopause, I was not well equipped with how to deal with it. And so my old methods no longer worked. And so for the last year and a half, I haven't been as physically active as I like being. I haven't been as resourceful as I like being. And I definitely went through my own form of suffering, which means my relationship with my body dysmorphia, I felt at the effect of it more often than I care to admit. And so what has changed it is getting back to what I love, which is physical exercise. But I got to be honest, I had to give myself permission for like a year to rest, to fall in love with my body at every stage, to not resist it, to not fight it, to not make it wrong, but to recognize that this was an experience I was going through. And usually when we go through hard experiences and we come out on the other side more equipped and much more resourced. So if any of you, I don't have anything about menopause in this book because I wrote this book and finished this book, before the menopause took its toll on my spirit and my being. But the point is if you feel like you're suffering, the way through it isn't to navigate it. It's to go around it and find things in your life about your body, about your life circumstances that you can be grateful for. But if you really want to get to the root of the symptom, you want to, you can have someone hold space for you, but you want to go to those places in your life where you abandoned you, and then you show up as you are now, well-equipped, well-resourced, like, all right, I'm going to parent the way I would have wanted to be parented or taken care of in that moment. And then you show up for yourself and you unabandon yourself in the moments that you abandoned yourself. So I hope you enjoyed today's show. If this resonated with you, please like, share, comment, subscribe, find us on all the channels, and feel free to leave a comment. And we are starting to take live callers. Last week we had a glitch in the system, but we believe it's fixed. So next week we'll leave it open. Actually, not next week, but the following week we'll leave it open for you to call in, ask me any question you have about your life, and we'll see where it goes. So thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, stay awesome. See you next time.
Catherine is not a medical practitioner nor a licensed therapist. She has strong opinions and will express them, and truly believes that you are your best advocate for any and every area of your life. If you need medical advice, please consult your physician.